This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Margie Dennis,
Stuart Burks,
and I'm Vicky Marie Buchanan. So Margie, thank you, welcome back again. And last week we talked a lot about growing up, growing up in Auckland. From Auckland you went to...
I went off to Pakistan, which was a huge move for me. I'd never been out of New Zealand.
Yes.
It was March 1969, mm-hmm. by which time, but only recently, flying out of New Zealand had become the norm.
Mm-hmm. Flying out on Air New Zealand or...
Oh, I think probably it was called Teal then, wasn't it?
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm not sure. I mean, I grew up with it being Teal, Tasman Empire Airways. But whether it had become Air New Zealand by the time I flew out, I can't really remember. But I do know I only got as far as Sydney the first day.
Right.
The second day, we got as far as Singapore. Mm-hmm. The third day, we got as far as Karachi via Colombo.
Right.
They were long journeys.
Yes, yes.
And I had signed up to go for 3 years and 9 months.
Wow, okay.
And that was huge. I had looked forward to it. I sensed it was right. Mm. But I had never lived away from my family.
How old were you then?
I was 27.
Right.
So no thought about, or you'll get married, or...
No, that's an interesting question, Stuart. As a teenager, I had come home from a youth group I attended one night, heartbroken because someone who I wanted to drive me home had ignored me all night and not driven me home. And I remember kneeling down by my bed, there was no one else at home when I got home, and really crying and sensing very definitely that I had words in my head that said, never mind, one day there will be someone much more worthy of you.
Aww.
Now, in actual fact, it was 23 years before that worthy person came along. But I went off to Pakistan with no fear about marriage. Who knew where I'd meet the person who was I was going to marry? And the girls at the college where I worked once I got to Pakistan would often say, Miss, why aren't you married? And I'd have to say, for their understanding, my parents haven't made an arrangement for me.
Right.
Because that was the norm. And to them, one of the jobs I did for most of the time I was there was look after one of their halls of residence, in addition to my position as secretary to the principal.
Right, so just I need to go back. Okay. You're going to... So you started working at... Was it a college?
It was a college. Right. It was a university college of the University of the Punjab.
Right.
It was only for women.
Right.
But they started university really at senior high school level in New Zealand.
Right.
They started at college after 10 years of education.
Okay.
We don't start at university till after 12 or 13 years of education. So they were younger, and they graduated with a BA or a BSc after 4 years at college.
Right.
So it was lower. And then if they were able to go on to a university in Europe or America or Britain, they would enter as undergraduates.
Right, right. And you heard about this college?
I heard about it in New Zealand through an agency called BMMF in those days, an agency that still exists and is common now known as Interserv. And that agency started in 1854 to bring medical care and education to women in undivided India. India was under the British Raj.
Right, right.
And I gather that women with the imperial, whatever they call it, the British India and in the British under the Empire, wrote to Queen Victoria, putting out the plight of women who were not allowed to be seen by a male doctor and not allowed to have any education. And it was as a result of that that some of the first women doctors were trained. And many, it was a good thing to do in those days to go with a Christian mission to India. That was how it was. And the college that I was at, Kinnaird College for Women, grew out of a high school that was also called Kinnaird High School. And it was founded by, I think, the woman that founded, or it was funded by Lady Kinnaird, who was in Britain, and who was interested in education, and funded this high school, which started in 1876.
Wonderful.
And then in 1913, out of the high school came Kinnaird College. Now, by the time I went there in 1969, it had been handed over for missions to the Christian Church in Pakistan, and all the different denominations had members on the board. But it was an affiliate college of the university, so its curriculum was governed by the university. It had quite a lot of foreign staff, but and the foreign staff came from Holland and Britain and America. And I found it very, very hard when I first went, because there were no other New Zealanders in Lahore City. And we foreigners all lived in the college, very, very old-fashioned, but very gracious living. Based on the Raj, many of the servants had been servants of the Raj, and so our meals were very formal, with bearers standing behind the table serving, and it was not modern in any way. We had no hot water, no air conditioning, and Lahore got up to the mid-40s often, temperature-wise. But to counteract that, we had magnificent grounds. The college was really in a beautiful setting. It had been a farm that they had taken new premises in the 1930s, built a farm, and on the staff at that time there'd been a botanist, taught botany, but she had arranged for the planting of flowering trees that flowered every month of the year. And it was a big campus, and it was probably the foremost college in Pakistan. It was able to take the cream of young people, young women, many of whom had been educated in English, and they were the privileged.
Now, there's something that's becoming very common now, which is the talk about colonization and the negative effects of colonization. But you're suggesting that really there were some very positive effects.
Very positive, I would say. I would say if you talk to any young woman that had been to Kinnaird, there would be great joy about that. And it's still a very famous college. It now goes up to master's level, maybe beyond that. I've been out of touch. I haven't visited the college since probably 2005 I was last there.
Yeah. And what subjects were they teaching then?
They were teaching humanities and science in those days. More latterly, computer studies, media studies, all that sort of stuff. But back then...
So it's now broad-based university.
Broad-based, yes. Yes, it was a... It was a beautiful place as far as the grounds, the lawns, the gardens, the trees. I remember when the first morning I arrived, I had bought a record player in Singapore en route, and I put on a record I'd taken of the Seekers. The Seekers were really popular in the late 60s.
Yeah.
And that... Playing that was the only familiar thing. The bread tasted different, the butter tasted different, everything was different.
Yes.
And I'd thought from New Zealand, well, at least the sky will be the same. The sky was not the same, because our clear blue skies that we're used to were seldom visible. There was a haze. Over Lahore, even in those days. There was the occasional blue sky, but when I arrived, I didn't see that.
So how did you cope with that then? Because that was a huge change from being at home with your family in New Zealand, beautiful little New Zealand, really, and going over to
the only answer, I was very lonely, especially around the meal table, where... Others, if anything happened, like a major fire or a major accident, people knew what they were talking about, but no one knew anything about New Zealand.
Yes.
That was very hard.
Yes.
And to cope with the loneliness, I had to, say, find students that were lonelier than me. We had students from East Africa of Pakistani or Indian origin. Mainly, well, they would be Muslim origin. Yes, they wouldn't be Indian origin. They would be Pakistani origin because their parents would be Muslims, not Hindus. So we had students from Malaysia too. Because it was a prestigious place, we had international students.
Right.
And they, of course, were away from home and family too. And so... I just used to have to look out for people and say, come and have a drink with me, and work at making myself make friends.
Yes, indeed.
I did not stay 3 years and 9 months because we were evacuated when Bangladesh was formed. Lahore, where the college was only 16 miles from the Indian border at Amritsar. And planes would be strafing overhead before the air raid sirens would go. 16 miles is nothing.
Yeah. Right.
And so the college, of course, was closed of students, and it was felt that those of us that were only children, and there were quite a few of us at the college, should leave Pakistan for the sake of our parents. And so we were, as New Zealanders, well, I as a New Zealander, was welcome to go out with the Brits. The RAF came in with Hercules and flew us out to Masira, in the Persian Gulf, which was a British Air Force base.
Right.
And then we were flown on VC-10s to London.
Right.
That was December 71. And I had to then fly on to New Zealand. And I was home for Christmas of 71. So only 2 years and 9 months after I'd left.
Right.
I then went back after having home leave. And stayed for almost 4 years without ever leaving the country, and was completely at home.
Right.
Loved
right.
it. Mm. I had yes. made friends, people that had been unfamiliar in those first years had become really good friends,
yes.
and some remain really good friends to this day.
Mm. Did you stay doing clerical work there, or did your work change?
I always stayed as secretary to the principal, but I looked after one of the hostels in addition to this.
Right.
And each of the hostels had an expatriate warden. We were called wardens. Parents who were high up in the military or the Air Force, diplomat parents, were very glad to have their girls in what they called, or they had this expression of people who worked with missionary zeal. That was a phrase that was common in Pakistan, because whatever people said about missionaries, they knew they worked hard and that they really cared about the work they did. And so they trusted their girls.
Now, this is a side that you haven't mentioned, really, but the religious dimension.
The religious dimension, yes. Well, our staff were a mixture of Muslims, Parsi, and Christians. No Hindu staff, because they'd all gone to India. We had girls whose families had been absolutely split by partition.
Gosh.
We're only 20 years after partition that I went there. And families had no idea what partition was going to mean. And so women had, or staff had, grandparents in India who they never saw now. And the girls believed that all Indians were bad. And I used to say to them, you know, if you girls were in another country and there were Indian girls there, you would be great friends, because basically you are all one people. It was an artificial division. Yes. So that's not really answering. Yes, you asked me about religion. We were known, and we were a Christian college. Muslim parents didn't seem to mind that fact. For the boarding students, the only religious aspect that was evident, for the boarding students, we had chapel morning and night. Led in the morning by the principal, and there would be a Bible reading, as there would have been in schools in New Zealand at that time. I always found about Kinnaird that we were preaching the ethic of Christianity, not the doctrine of Christianity, the ethic. And I think to Muslims that's perfectly acceptable.
Yes.
Because there's overlap anyway.
Absolutely. So what few Christian students from the Christian community we had, they had a class a week of Christian instruction. But I think from memory it was only one class a week. When I say what few Christian students we had, most the Christians were much poorer than the Muslim population, much poorer. And they usually had their education in Urdu.
Yeah.
And most of the Muslim girls had been to Catholic or English medium schools. Okay. Catholic schools were very highly regarded, and the girls that had been educated in those schools had as good an English as I had.
But were they from a different ethnic group or a different
not a different ethnic group. The Christian community would have come from probably mass conversions at some point,
yeah,
a long way back.
Okay.
But they were certainly looked down on, yeah, by the Muslims.
So, there's a strong caste system in India.
Was, yes,
it,
but it doesn't...
Pakistan?
Not in Pakistan. Mm. Not in theory in Pakistan. There's the equality of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it didn't always extend to Christians, actually. You know, they were looked down on.
Yeah.
And so the girls who... Christian girls who did come usually came from Urdu medium schooling and therefore were at a distinct disadvantage,
right,
because at college level all education was in English.
Right.
And so they had a double disadvantage,
yes,
really.
Yeah. Mm. Bring it together.
Mm. But they, you know, truly within the college, Muslim and Christian girls were good friends.
Mm.
Yeah.
And in those days, Pakistan was far more liberal than it is today. I remember one student in all my 8 years there who wore a burqa. Our girls did not have their heads covered. They wore a dupatta, a scarf, but it was round their neck rather than over their head. It was... Yes, it was a liberal place.
So 4 years there, and when you went back there, and then you returned to New Zealand? Or?
Yes, I did, because my parents were not very well.
Right.
And that, and actually, my mother died just a year after I came back, and my father 3 years later. Both died before I married.
Right.
Yes, so, and coming back, I was a pain in the neck. I recognise now how... I have a memory very soon after I arrived that my mother was lining our kitchen cupboards with contact, the sticky stuff that you put on shelves.
Mm.
And I can remember being absolutely horrible to her, saying... Newspaper's always been good enough for us on our kitchen cupboards. What do you think you're doing? The contrast of the wealth of New Zealand and how life was, not so much for the college girls. They often came from pretty wealthy backgrounds. They had travelled already more than I had. But for the people on the street, life was so poor. And that stayed with me until this day.
Yes.
People might say I'm frugal, but it's knowing how the other half live.
Yes.
Did that give you an impression, though, of, among the poor, at least a strong community or a strong family structure? Mutual support?
Oh, yes. There's no question that family means everything to people in situations like that, and they're very dependent on family help. Definitely.
So, having had that amazing experience in there, how you struggled, you know, it was a challenge to adapt back.
Very definitely. I can remember my mother in the first week I was here saying, well, I'm not taking you to... In Pakistan, we all wore shalwar kameez. I mean, you needed your legs covered.
Shalwar kameez.
Right, shalwar. That is the baggy, topped, narrow-bottomed trouser. Very comfortable in hot weather. Very, very comfortable. And the kameez is the shirt that goes on top of it. And then accompanying that is a dupatta, a scarf. The dupatta is the Urdu word. So I had one or two full-length dresses that we wore for special dinners and whatnot. And I came back to New Zealand saying, this clothing is perfectly adequate. It's very nice clothing. Well, my mother... had other ideas, and took me to a very fashionable shop in St. Luke's Mall, which had opened during the time I was away. And I remember that the outfit we bought, which was four pieces, it was a skirt and blouse, there were trousers, and there was a cape that was like a coat length. And that cost $150. And the average weekly wage I had noted down not long before I left Pakistan was $56 for women, the average weekly wage. So that outfit cost 3 weeks' wages. I mean, when you think today, we're talking 1976. It was probably the most lovely outfit I ever had, and I got my money's worth out of it. I wore it for years and years and years. But yes, there were many arguments about.
And that weekly wage was food and
everything,
and costume,
mortgage,
and
everything.
Yes.
Yes.
And you were wearing
I was wearing 3 weeks' wage.
Yes.
I never wore the whole four garments at one time, but I wore...
I was going to say, your future husband, if he saw you in that, thought, oh, she'll be high maintenance.
Thereby hangs a story.
Yeah.
A major story.
We'll come to that next week.
Yes.
Thank you, Margie.
This is part two of four. Listen next week for part three.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.